The buffaloes run into the storm. The cows run away from storms. Whereas the cow's trying to like avoid the storm, it actually prolongs it. Because the more that it runs away from it, the longer the storm keeps coming and eventually it has to get there. Whereas the buffalo runs the complete opposite way into the storm, because the faster it goes through the storm, the better it's going to be on the other side. So some people are hoping and wishing for easier times, but they need to be hoping and wishing for them to be better people.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of Up in Christ Show, a show where we inspire the masses to become financially free while building God's kingdom. On the show today, we have Mr. Lawrence Gonzalez. Mr. Lawrence is the creator of the Financial Literacy Education blog, The Neighborhood Finance, and a co-host of Financial GERD podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss how Mr. Lawrence increased his network from negative $125,000 to $750,000 plus in 9 years, and how he teaches others to improve their finance. So thank you for being here, Mr. Lawrence.
Thank you for having me on this stage. Thank you again. And the name is, if you kind of hear my dog, I apologize. He sometimes sees the neighbors and he kind of goes a little nuts. But ultimately, hopefully my wife calms him down and we could get started with this conversation.
No problem. So my first question, just so you know, outside of, you know, I kind of went through your biography briefly. But who is Mr. Lawrence outside of being a financial guy, the co-host of the Financial GERD podcast? Who is Mr. Lawrence?
All right. Besides from being a financial literacy enthusiast, I do have a day job. My day job is a federal auditor, so I do get paid from that. I am married, so I'm a husband. I am a dog owner, and I love to travel. So outside of all of it, is basically who I really am. I like to teach people what I know, share with them the access to this wealth so they can actually build it themselves and also improve their livelihoods in the long run. So I do this because it's just something I think I've been pseudo called to do, something I've always been good at. And I just want to share it so that other people could find some level of financial stability, some level of financial wealth, and also structure their lives in a way that could really inspire them and really change the trajectory of where we're going in today's society. No, I do it for fun. I'm not getting paid.
that's well over. I'm glad you found this passion and, you know, in teaching other people about financial literacy. And it kind of leads to my next question, you know, what inspired you to start this journey, a financial journey? When did a light bulb go off to you? Like, I need to get my finance together. So when did that go off for you?
Yeah, this thing kind of, there's a lot of different spots in which it just kind of like blew up in my mind. I'm really good at remembering pretty much all the way back to like I was 4 years old. I could remember specific incidents that happened. I'm really good at that. One of those things I remember seeing for the longest time, because I was born in Miami, but my mom couldn't take care of me and my sibling. So she sent me to live in Haiti. So I didn't actually know my mom nor my dad till like maybe like, I would say 7 or 8 years old. But before that, I spent all the time with my aunts. And my aunts, for as much as they shared with me the world, it wasn't the same as actually having your parents around you, right? But in that vein, I learned to be very much more resourceful within myself. I learned to, you know, basically listen to others, but not necessarily follow others blindly. And one of those people I'd love to follow until she kind of lied to me one time was my grandmother. She lied to me because I asked her what was on my finger. It was like, it's a thing. It's basically calcium deficiency that pops up like a little white thing in your yeah. nails. But she said, oh, it's a gift. I'm like, what the heck? And I had to look it up. And I realized that even your grandmother, who is, you know, at least at that point, almost all underneath the almighty, like she knew everything. She knew everyone. She can be wrong. And I think at that point, I realized you have to do a lot of research for yourself. You got to learn. One of those things that they did as well is my grandmother had a small coffee shop or like a small boutique that was open in the morning. So they sell breakfast there. And in the end of the day, my aunt would come back with like a ledger. I didn't know what the name was. It was just a book that didn't have actual words in it. It had numbers. So to me, that was endlessly fascinating. I had no idea why it was so important, because she guarded with her life. She made sure that the numbers coming in, numbers coming out. And as I start to learn about that, I start to save my own money. I was that kid that was like, no, you know what? It seems like money is very important. Maybe I need to save it. So instead of actually using my money to, you know, catch a bus to school, I literally walked the entire way back. So when you hear about that, the grandparents that said I was walking, you know, 3 miles in the snow, yeah, maybe not so for me, but I was walking the 3 miles happily because I felt I was saving at least $1 or $2 a day. So at that point, it kind of like structured my life to understand that money was valuable. I ignored those lessons, ideally, in my mind as I went through, matriculated through college, and I accumulated $100,000 of student loan debt. At that time, and on top of that, I also had credit card debt. So I ended up in totality, I had $125,000 of pure debt, and I didn't have a job to lean into. The first job I was able to get was making $27,000 a year. In the car, I made a promise to God, like, if I'm going to get this job, whatever that job is, whatever amount of money that's going to pay me, I'm going to do better with my money this time around. I will figure this thing out. I will not make this mistake. And you have to remember, I'm from Florida, where, you know, you had, if your car didn't have the power windows or the AC, a lot of us didn't have it. We had to roll down the window and also catch it while the rain is pouring down. And I was like, I'm going to make this pledge because I want to know more about it. I want to do better by it because I understood it. And why can I not figure it out if my grandmother had 6 kids, lived in Haiti, and was still able to actually provide for her family and also for the community at the same time? And like, if she could do it, I'm like, I could do it too. I could do the bare minimum. And that's when I started my journey.
Wow, that's pretty...
I could go deeper.
Yeah, you're
there's more.
You're definitely free to go deeper. But I guess, you know, that's right. That's a very impressive story to start off. Like, I'm thinking about, like, one, you know, what made you stop? Like, you know, you knew that at a young age, you know, most of you don't learn about financial literacy until like 25 or whatever. But what made you like, okay, I'm gonna put that aside? Or like, what was that thought process going? Like, what was the thought process? Like, I'm gonna ignore that and now come back to the realization once you're that much in depth that, okay, yeah, I need to get back on that path.
I think part of it is, it's just youth. The idea that we went to school, we just wanted to experience life. We wanted to open ourselves up. And most of the time, you didn't want to be the sourpuss. You know, you want to be that person that say, oh, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. So you kind of, you grin and bear it. And you just try to enjoy as much as life as possible. Like, let's say just going to the movies. You didn't want to be the person that said, I don't want to go to a movie, I don't have the money. You're even going down the street to get something to eat. You don't want to say that I'm not, you know, you never want to just continually be that person. So therefore you just slightly fall into a routine. And as you fall into this routine, you end up, you know, basically picking up a lot of debt along the way. One of those, like, you know, moments back in 2012 as well that I had was, we were in this quad. I won't say it's the quad because it's 4 people living in the same area in the college town and in the same apartment complex. So all my buddies were in the center. We were talking about something else. And one of the guys said, and he proclaimed, they don't want us to invest. I started wondering, like, who is they? Like, you have to pronounce, like, who is who? But he could never tell me who that person was. But then that moment, I went back to my room and I started like using mint.com, which is a good tracking cash flow, like a budgeting app. Is free. You're looking into it. And for 3 months, I tracked my budget. And I noticed that I was spending $365 on average per month on food. I wasn't eating like Red Lobster. I wasn't eating like some fancy meals. There weren't no Uber Eats at the time. There's nothing around to really contextually say that I was spending this much money on food, whereas families were paying that much. Families of four were paying that much on food per month. It made no sense. Beyond that, I went back and I told those guys, like, hey guys, look what I found. Look what I found. Like, it might be worse for, you know, and they didn't want to hear it. So I went back to my room again and I started to do more research and really documenting my other buddies' journey as well. Turns out on average, we're paying $2,400 per month on food. Like in a household of four guys, not eating great anything. Like, we were just eating Boston Market, Chipotle, Popeyes here. Some guys would be eating breakfast out, lunch and dinner. And all of these micro spendings ended up costing us $2,400 per month. it's an insane proposition when you think about it. We just were not using our money wisely and we were throwing it out. And the more and more I try to help them with it, which is basically meaning that I try to explain it to them, they didn't want to listen. I took all my experience and I would go to high schools, middle schools, and really teach kids how to either value their education, make sure that they're getting a degree that supports their financial needs, and also to explain to them how much it really costs. The more and more you explain that to kids, the more they got it. My friends didn't get it, but they got it. And that's how I ended up on this journey.
Nah, that's really
a lot, huh?
So that's, you're blowing my mind here listening to it. Hey, you know, before I go on with what you just said, I want to kind of go back and go back to, like, you know, your grandma, how she influenced you. Were you ever able to tell her, you know, that, you know, how she influenced you in terms of money, your aunts, you know, how they influenced you to start thinking about money at such a young age?
No, unfortunately, I didn't. My grandmother passed away years ago. And at the time, I didn't understand the lessons because, you know, I guess when you're younger too, you're just thinking, oh, well, she doesn't make anything. She doesn't know anything. Or we just basically like castize older people without actually truly knowing them. But most of the time I was watching. And once I kind of realized, like, where do I get my financial information from? And I started processing my memories. And I noticed that a couple of things that was happening. My grandmother never made a lot of money. Like, I don't think she ever made more than 20K a year. To be honest, wow. I don't think she ever did that. In Haiti, you just make money. You make enough money to provide for your family. And that's just about it. My mother never made more than 30K a year. Why do I know that? Because I did her taxes. I could see her Social Security. It's like less. It's like, we were poor. We were poor, poor. And it's proof in that moment, I started realizing, how do even those people make a certain amount of money work, right? Even if it's just a little bit amount of money work. My grandmother, or even the Haitian culture, we did a lot of meal prepping all the time. We didn't call it meal prepping at the time. It was just what we did. Like, there was a vat of food in the fridge and that's all we did. And we always had enough, not even just for ourselves, but for anybody that passed, you know, through, like in the neighborhood, they're just passing by and whatever it was, we always had enough food. Maybe not like an absurd amount of food and you're not, you know, overeating yourself, but there's always enough for ourselves and our neighbors. And for some reason we lost that ability as a group of people. We stopped cooking in, you know, and having neighbors over and having that open door policy. We stopped doing all these things and it's costing us more and more. On top of that, she also sold like alcohol, which is like a bottled, like, it's think about eggnog or something. She just basically does that kind of thing seasonally, you know, when that time comes. And lo and behold, she was side hustling. But I didn't know that that's what the name of it is, or I guess the millennials didn't call it that until years later, but that's what she was doing. All of these things that our elders were doing were financially literate and, you know, ideas. They went to the market, they haggled, they knew what prices, you know, things were. They knew exactly what the profit is, what's not a profit, what is the loss, what is the sale. They understood all those concepts without ever going to college. Without ever going to like grad, you know, grammar school. My grandmother never went to all those things, but she knew all these ideas on a fundamental level and she utilized it. And she was never, as I would define it, poor. She was always wealthier than anything I've ever known. And when she passed away, I was at the funeral and I was literally holding back people like it was Michael Jackson. Like, it was really bad. Like, you had one hand holding down the person that's crying, the other hand mushing the other person trying to rush. It's an insane proposition, but this woman carried her life beyond just the money, but also to really impact her neighborhood and the people around her. And I had to learn those lessons in order for me to move forward as well.
Hey family, I hope you're enjoying this episode so far. And if you are and you have yet to subscribe to us here on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button. And also, if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts and you have yet to leave us a 5-star review, please do so. Now back to the episode.
Those are definitely great lessons. You kind of have me thinking of my own grandma. And by the way, you know, my condolence for your loss. Like both my grandmas, you know, how they like interact with money. You know, one was always saving. Like, and no matter it was Christmas, our birthday, I think it's about like eight of us. She has two kids. My dad got three, and his sister has three. So that's 6, 8. Every time Christmas, she always giving us money, and it just like she was always planning ahead. You know, it was never a Christmas or a birthday that came that she didn't miss any one of our birthdays to give us like $50, $20. Like, she always had money. And, you know, my other grandma, you know, she was always investing, looking always to buy different properties and starting different side hustles. And it's just, yeah, you're right. They learn all these different things without going to any, getting any masters or any, getting any fancy degree, which is interesting because going back to your story, nowadays youth, we think that we're wiser than our elders. As a result, we make the same mistakes that they make instead of learning from them. And I want to ask, what would you say to someone, who may be going to college, who may be getting ready to go to college, to avoid that same mistake, to actually seek this counsel from wise people, and learn from your mistake, learn from our mistake, so they don't make the same mistake.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question because I don't know if they can even avoid making those mistakes. Sometimes those mistakes really define us. I think my life was difficult. I would say that, to that point, it had those issues. It could have been a lot easier. I could have went down I guess, a smoother path, a more enriching path, a wealthier path, where I've been a CPA and top firm, so on and so forth. But then I wouldn't be the person I am today. I think in the end of the day, God does have a mission and a purpose for all of us. As much as we don't want to, or we want to avoid every mistake, we're going to make a new mistake. I think part of it is to start listening to other people and then also stop listening to the people that's closest around us all the time. A lot of people that are going to college, we still try to hold on to our past friends, our past environments, the people that were around us, so on and so forth. But when you get into a stage in your life that is different, and then you're running into different people, try to learn from them. Try to open up your ears more, and even your eye, to just watch and observe as much as possible, because you never know what you're going to learn. I think towards the end of my collegiate career, well, at the beginning of my collegiate career, I asked a question to like an advisor coming in, what should I do? And at one point, like he really slowed it down and said, "Hey, join some salsa stuff." And I looked at him and I almost like in Creole terms, we give it back, which basically we like, whatever. It's not that serious. Boo, that was a dumb idea. And I'm gonna move on. By the end, when I was in grad school, at that point, I actually did end up, in salsa classes, and it was the most amazing thing I ever had in my experience that I had in my life, period. I was learning different things from different people. I was encouraged, I was connected, and I was also energized. And sometimes I wish I had listened to that guy at the very beginning, because that would have made a lot more sense for my life. Yes, I would still made different mistakes, that's for sure, but I would have been in a path that's a little bit different than holding on to my past identity. Especially in the Black community, we're somehow pigeonholed into a very small box of what it means to be Black or what it means to be like that thing, right? But yet, whereas I've seen a lot of people really go further in life when they stop trying to fit themselves in that box and start basically opening themselves up to be the person that they're supposed to be. Like some people are hikers. Naturally, they've never been hiking, but the more they hit a hike, they're gonna explode out the gate. They're gonna enjoy it. Some people are, good at, this thing called financial literacy, but they wouldn't know because their entire environments have told them for years that they're not good at money, or money is not a thing that we should, aspire to, or wealth is not this, wealth is not that. All these misconceptions really box us in, and it shapes us, and it also moves us away from where we're supposed to be. And that's what I'd say to anybody that's listening and trying to go to their journey. Go on the journey. Don't hold on to that part and just stay in that path, in that place, and thinking that you're going, while you're going in circles, that you're moving forward. You're not. You need to be moving forward. You need to be learning as much as possible and understanding it as well.
No, that you're 100% right, and I'm kind of glad that you kind of mentioned, how this is God's purpose for you, this is God's plan for you. That if you didn't go through the mistakes that you went through, it would have been hard for you to be who you are. And I want to ask, how does your faith, through the trials and the tribulation, realize that, okay, you're spending $2,000 something on food as a group, to now, okay, I need to start saving, I need to start looking where my money is going, to start teaching high school students, and now you're on podcasts and shows around the world, how does your faith help you?
I think I've always had faith. I've always had faith, but there's sometimes I kind of like shunned it or kind of pushed it aside in favor of the more secular thing. Anything else that was happening that was cool, that was fun, I try to go into it. And every time that it did, it also pushed me away from where I was supposed to be. It basically ultimately made things worse or made things more difficult. I think my faith have always been around to keep me grounded because I grew up without my parents, my mom and dad. I had that internalized like damage, that childhood trauma, in regards to just my own personal confidence. How can a kid be confident when their own parents got rid of them, technically, right? or in that sense. It's hard to even like be yourself in that sense. And you're trying to find a purpose, you're trying to find your reason, and you have to hold on to something. And most of those times when I was in those dark places, that was my faith. The idea that I could just like, hey, in the end of the day, somebody's here with me. Somebody's here guiding me. Somebody's here protecting me. It can always be, I guess in the Marine Corps, we call it could always be worse. It could all be worse than whatever it is. And the more and more you dive into that, you start feeling challenged, but you can also say that God gives you all the tools so you can overcome those challenges. And those challenges that you're overcoming today will give you more tools so that you can overcome the next challenges down the line. Or you could be in the position where you could help somebody else based on the stuff that you learned. So even recently, last weekend, there was a domestic violence issue that happened near a buddy of mine's house. Like the only reason I was able to step up to that situation and, you know, actually become an obstacle or just a deterrent and for more negativity is because I've been through so much already in my past. I don't think I would be the type of person to step in there if I wasn't aware of that before. I might just, like other people, you could fight, flight, or freeze. Most people freeze. I don't freeze. So I'm happy that my experiences and my past, however difficult it was, has geared me and added so much resources to me that I'm confident enough I can move in faith all the way through. So it's almost like if anything else that happens, I'm always more confident that I'm only living in the purpose that he provides me anyways.
Now, I like that. I truly appreciate that perspective, because oftentimes, you know, as Christians, as people, we go through life and we always feel entitled to be successful. We feel like, you know, certain things shouldn't happen. But yet we forget the lessons that we learned, how the lessons, you know, what they're preparing us for, you know, how they can benefit us, you know, as human beings in terms of growing. And I like the fact that you mentioned that it prepared you, you know, for last week, you know, to be able to stop or something from getting any worse than necessarily needs to be. And I want to ask, you know, what are some tools that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you was going through different challenges, you accumulate different tools to help you in this wealth journey. So I want to ask, you know, what are some tools that you use to go from negative $125 to now $750,000 in net worth?
Wow, let's go through the entirety of everything I've done. And I'll see if I could kind of run it through. First and foremost, you got to take inventory. Taking inventory is really trying to find a footing and being grounded. A lot of people are so distracted with the way of the world, the news, the music, the media, the social media as well, that you get lost into that other identity that's not even yours. I'd say get grounded. Meaning that for this weekend or any weekend, you slow things down, you find a peaceful place, which is part of that meditation and the Catholicism, like worship, is the fact that you slow down enough to have a conversation within yourself, with God and with yourself, to decide like, okay, what's my 5, 10, 20 year plan? What is it? It doesn't mean that the plan will always activate and always get to that point, but you have to know where you're going. It's kind of like getting in the car, have no idea where you're going, and you're just driving. You know, at one point you're going to run out of gas or you're going to end up the complete opposite place that you're supposed to be. So I encourage people to take that simple step, which is not even financial at all, but to really kind of define their goals for the next 5, 10, 20 years. What is your general goal? Write it down. Talk it through with yourself. Talk it through with your spouse or significant other, or even your family. It could even be an exercise for a weekend. And after that, I think that's where you start with one, getting on an app like mint.com, which is free just to track your personal finances, doing a full on inventory of what the amount of money coming in and the amount of money going out. It's not a judgment of any sort. It's just, you gotta know. If you have no idea how much money is going out, then of course you're gonna you're gonna be spending $2,400 a month on food because you had no idea. But the more you know, the more you're very aware of it, the less that you do these things and these issues, and the more you provide opportunities for yourself. Beyond that, the next thing I ended up doing is one, ensure, and I'll say this to anybody that has a typical job or salary position, make sure you take the match of your 401k, 403b, or 457b. They're all the same thing. There are different things at different industries, but they all have the same limits and so on and so forth per the IRS. And the match contribution on average is around $3,000. even if it's $4,000, even if it's $5,000 a year, that amount over the course of what, 30 years or even 40 years can actually add up to the tune of at least $500,000 if you do it correctly. And it's free money. The entire thing is free money. You cannot like escape that. And for a lot of people that are working these salary positions, they're like, I don't want to do the match, whatever it is. But it's a lot of money that you're going to need for retirement. And you do not want to be in a position where you retire broke or retire destitute. That's not what you're trying to do for 40, 50, or even 60 years of work. That's insane. Beyond that, I would say, make sure that you pay down your credit card debt. With inflation going up and interest rate going up, the variable debt that you have will go up as well. And a lot of people are carrying as much as $6,000 worth of credit card debt. And at a minimum payment, it will take you 25 years to pay that all off. And it will take you $9,000 worth of interest. So you cannot afford not to pay down your credit card debt. This is real stuff here. After that, what I ended up doing myself and also for my wife, we maxed out our 401ks. We've been in a position where we kind of went from, making 23, I think she was making 40, but now we're equally matching like 100K. It's not going to be the scenario for everyone, but if you can, you start matching or maximizing your contribution, your 401K, 403B, or 457B. The limit is around $20,500 for 2022, $22,500 for 2023. That maximum contribution over even 17 years would probably get you close to $500,000, more than $500,000, but close to at least $1 million worth of actual investment. You're basically investing in yourself, which the government wants you to do. It saves you on your own taxes, which is also good for you, and also grows historically on average about 8%. So over the time of even like 20 years, you'll be a millionaire. So wealth is not this like difficult thing to do. It's fairly easy, but you have to commit and you have to become intentional about the process. There's I forget what it is, but I can't really ever quote anything. That's never been my gift. But there is a proverb that had the idea of investing. And when God gives three people three levels of investment, some person invested more, some person invested in the middle, and the other guy just kind of buried in the back. He's like, hey, see, I didn't lose any of that money, but you did. You did lose the money. You lose the opportunity of growing that wealth and going beyond it. And because you lost it through inflation, which is like a real everyday cost. You lost it through opportunity and you lost it through just being able to grow and learn. And I think that's the true lesson of that parable, is the idea that you have to invest in this day and age. You cannot sit on your laurels. You can't just sit, money underneath the bed and just hope everything is going to go well. It's not going to go well this way. You have to be active and engaged in yourself, in your family, and as well in your community. I think I kind of covered just about everything, but you can actually become a millionaire in less than 17 years if you do it correctly.
Well, that's impressive. And the story is, for those who are listening, is the story of the talents. Where God gave one 5, one 3, and the other one was 1. And the one that had, I think the other one was 2. And the one that had 1 decided to bury, while the one that had 2 double it, while the one that has 5 also double it. And it's a very important lesson for us to learn, for us to invest, while we can. And that kind of wants me to go into, you mentioned interest rates, with interest rates, there's rumors of recession coming on. And as you mentioned, a lot of people are scared, a lot of people are frightened, they're not prepared for this. What would your advice be to someone who may be going through this recession for the first time, going through this economic downturn for the first time? What would you tell this person?
Well, majority of us have actually been through another economic downturn not too long ago, 2020. So it's always actually interesting that the human mind processes losses and also lessons like very differently. Like in our mind, we just kind of like forget that it actually happened, but it just happened. In 2020, when the market dropped, everybody said, I will change my ways. I will never be the way that I was last time. I will be different by the end. I think at the time too, when everybody said they couldn't save more than 8%, it's impossible, so on and so forth. But when everything was closed, the average savings rate went up 33%. They've never seen it before in a very long time. It went up 33% for at least 2 months. Why? Because everything was closed. Turns out we can actually save more. You can save more. You can actually do more with your money. And those lessons that you learned in 2020, which is not too long ago, is the same lessons that's going to get you through 2023 or even the market downturn. those things of like really changing your lifestyle, figuring out a new diet, making sure that you're spending more time with your family, going out less in the idea of just spending money for fun, but really just realizing that nature is also a good time. Like you go running, do, you know, 5Ks, you could go hanging out with your friends in their backyard. All of these things are still very much plausible. And I think that's the biggest lesson that people need to learn from 2020 is that you can change, radically change your life. You have to be willing to make that decision and stick to it. It's kind of like a person that's overweight, like myself. I'm not completely as fit as I used to be, but I can't get fitter by just kind of doing the same negative, problems every day, day in, day out. I have to get up in the morning. I have to maybe walk the block. I have to run down the street, so on and so forth is going to help. For anybody that's afraid terribly about the interest rates going up, make sure that you're paying down your debt as soon as possible, because those things are also going up. That means there's less money in your bank account. That's just what it's going to come down to. For anybody that's worried about buying a home, you probably didn't have the money to get the home to begin with. So I'm like, why are you mad? Like, he's like, I can't believe this year, you know, it's the year that I don't have it. Like majority of people, we have to get to a point where we have to be honest with ourselves and we have to be tempered by these challenges instead of running away from them. There's another story, it's another quote out there that's that I found was very fascinating. The buffaloes run into the storm, the cows run away from storms. Whereas the cows trying to like avoid the storm, it actually prolongs it. Because the more that it runs away from it, the longer the storm keeps coming and eventually it has to get there. Whereas the buffalo runs the complete opposite way into the storm, because the faster it goes through the storm, the better it's going to be on the other side. So some people are hoping and wishing for easier times, but they need to be hoping and wishing for them to be better people. And I think that's what we need to go by. These ideals, these fundamentals, changing our lifestyle, making sure that we're doing the best with the talents or the opportunities that we have on a day-to-day basis, ensuring that we're living not just for the moolah, but for the people, really spending time with each other, having conversation with our elders, with our kids, with ourselves, with our spouses, really listening to other people, because it's a trying time for a lot of people in an emotional, spiritual, or even a mental level. This is why we hear so much conversation about therapy. We have to get to the point where we're listening to each other instead of listening past each other, right? We have to slow these things down and really say, hey, did I hit up my friend the other day? Now, I haven't talked to them in 6 months. I only see them on social media. Let me talk to them. Let me call them on the phone. Let me go down the street to go hang out with my friend to see how they're really doing versus then the facade that a lot of us project on social media, right? It's not always okay. It's not always all good. And I think that's what you need to learn in downturns, because those things are cyclical. They happen constantly. They'll be back. This economic downturn is like, it's a sine cosine wave that you learn, you know, where they said you didn't learn any financial literacy in school, but you also learn signs, but you don't know that too. So ultimately, this is the sine and cosine wave is an up and down struggle that we always gonna have to face. At some point, the economy will trough down, but it'll also come back up again. That's the idea. And if you understand that, then you don't panic. You have faith. Faith is just knowledge. It's an understanding. It's the truth of you know who you are, a true identity, and you stand 10 toes down. Stand on 10 toes down. I don't know how, I don't think you can stand any other way, but you know, hey, a lot of these statements are said, I don't know.
That's 100%, 100% right on that. You're 100% right about that, you know, cycles, you know, they go up and down like the sign, but I've like never heard that. That's the first time I actually relate that, because oftentimes you hear people saying that they never, all this school, you know, we never use Y equals MS plus B. And I'm just like,
I know you use it every time. Every time you walk up a stair, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, that's exactly what a stair is.
And you're 100% right about Jacoby, what you said about interest rates, you know, how it affects, you know, the housing and people not able to afford a house. You know, if you wasn't able to afford a house in 2020, you know, when percent was like 2%, 3%, and it doesn't make a difference now that the interest rate is almost at 6 or 7, 8%. And, you know, my next question is, you know, I realize, you know, something that you mentioned a lot so far is enjoying life while building this wealth, you know, in this current age, in this current environment we are, because of social media, it's like this hustle and grind mindset. We gotta, you know, get to work, do this, get back, invest, go to all these 100 conferences, and repeat that whole cycle and not necessarily have time to enjoy. And before you know it, you know, time has gone and at the end of our life. And you know, one thing I realized that you do a lot is travel. You know, you spend a lot of travel. And so I want to ask, you know, how do you manage building wealth and still be able to travel?
Yeah, that's one of the hard mathematical algebra 2 equations out here. So I'll go back to this. I'll say this for anybody that's listening. Wealth is fairly simple. It's a combination of three things. You decrease your unintended expenses, you increase your income, and you invest the difference. That's really just three things. It's never been more complicated than that. It's always been those things. So you decrease your expenses that you don't need. They're unnecessary. You don't like them. You increase your income, and you also invest the difference. So for me and my wife, the thing that we got rid of is those unnecessary expenses. I used to go to happy hours, but then I realized I wasn't happy. I was like, why am I doing these things that I'm not actually really happy doing? And now spending you do social drinking. I don't think I've ever been one to really get punch drunk out, you know, in the ether out there. But I've always been the person, I'll get a drink or two. But those drinks or two are maybe like, they're getting to the point where $20, $25. It's insane. So I started cutting those out. I phased those out of me. And I started finding ways to just keep me very happy without doing the unnecessary stuff. And by doing that, I ended up saving more money and I ended up paying down my debts, which is great, which is I basically decreased my expenses. I used the difference to pay down my debt. So that's great. At the same time, we're increasing our income. We're paying down even more debts, creating more cash flow. And as we create more cash flow, then you start doing the things you want. A lot of people say it's a sacrifice, but it's never been a sacrifice for me. I don't think I've ever, like in my mind, I was like, I didn't sacrifice the thing I didn't like. I stopped doing it. Just like I told a friend of mine that had 4 streaming devices, and I'm actually called this one out. She had Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, Amazon Prime. I think she had 5, and she had Peacock. I'm like, what do you have Peacock for? Oh, I watched this one show on Peacock. I'm like, Peacock, really? Like, you've gone too far. At some point, she don't even have time to watch all of these streaming devices, but we're getting to the point in society where we just feel that we need to have everything. And because we need to have everything, it's costing us everything. So The point is, you need to do what you focus on what you need to do in order to create what you want to do in the long run. The more and more you do those things, like, you know, paying down your debt, not buying to this, not spending money frivolously, really becoming more intentional with your spending in regards to your time, you start noticing that, hey, like when I go on travel, me and my wife, we carte blanche. Carte blanche basically means like, hey, if I'm out there and the thing costs $20, $50, I'm spending it because this is where I love to be. So I don't have no problem going to a place that I love, doing a thing that I love and spending the money that way versus to do it just frivolously. And I think when you start cutting down those things that are frivolous, you start noticing that there's a lot more money to do a lot more things with. And I think that's how we end up traveling over to 2019, right before we got married or before we got engaged, we went to 14 countries in 12 days. It was amazing. And we would have went to more countries if it wasn't a pesky COVID and the pandemic. But we're going to go back to a couple more countries and we're going to still kind of do what we love to do. But ultimately, like, yeah, we did that because, and people was like, oh, you're on sabbatical. Did you, you know, come into a lump sum of money? No, I just kept on planning it. I stopped really just, I don't eat out. I don't do a lot of Uber Eats. A lot of people are spending as much as $1,000 per month on meal delivery. So they're getting that. That's a problem. On top of that, even if it's $500 a month, that's $500 per month for a year. That's $6,000. That's a trip. That's a travel. And that's how much the entire travel cost us. A good $6,000. It was not even that expensive. We just kind of went to different places. We enjoyed a lot of it. And we just did what was intentionally for us and what we love to do.
No, that's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive. I'm going to 14 countries.
Yeah, I'm a cheat. I cheated a little bit there, so I'm not going to like let y'all know. The Vatican is the country. So if you're in Rome, you hit the Vatican, that's 2-1. And in France as well, France has is next to Monaco. So we went to Monaco, which is also its own country. So you got to, you know, you can cheat the game. You can cheat the game.
Nah, that's not, you're 100% right. I'm glad you shared that. And, you know, one thing I want to definitely talk about, you know, in your journey, I know your wife has been supporting you throughout this whole journey. And it's something that is also common in this day of theme is, you know, how do you manage your money with a significant other? How do you manage your money with a spouse, you know, where it's not like it gets sticky or, you know, it gets Crazy. So how do you go about managing your finance with your wife? Whereas like you guys both understand each other, seem like you guys enjoy your time, travel. Yeah, because money's one of the second reason, if I'm not if I'm mistaken, why people get divorced. So yeah, how do you guys manage your money where it doesn't get sticky?
One, I'll challenge that thing that says money is one of the reasons. I think people poorly planning their entirety of their relationship is the main reason why they fall apart in marriage. Like, to be completely honest, some people are just going to like marriage or the relationship and just they're winging it. They're winging it all the way through. And by the time they run out of cash, that could be a catalyst, that's for sure. But it was all based off the fact that the root cause was lack of planning, lack of forethought, lack of intentionality in regards to who they are and who they're loving and how they're developing a house of love. That's just a outtake of mine. But this entire journey has been nothing but probably easy. And I've dated plenty. I dated probably like a good 10 people before I got with my wife. And that's kind of weird because my wife's gonna be like, "What the?" Like, but I dated, and it was always something a little bit off. It wasn't really ever comfortable sometimes. And with my wife, it was easy. I think that's what I learned throughout the process. Love is fairly an easy thing if you find the right one. And that's what a lot of people are not putting enough time to do. They're not finding the right person for them. They might be looking for the person aesthetically, the person that looks good, the person that has the money, the person that whatever, but they're not really thinking deeper about what the nature of how do they love themselves, how do they love, God, or even how they love their own spouse. So we ran into each other. My wife makes this entire process fairly easy. She's not a too very complicated person. She's slightly more of the spender than I am. You know what? I don't even say that. It's hard to say because she spends micro, but I think guys tend to spend like on big ticket items. Like when we spend, we might be mad that they spent $50, $100 here, but we'll spend $500 a PS5. Like the count is just not there. But that's why I've noticed like she's always been I guess on board with the idea of personal finance and working together. It's been fairly seamless and easy because I think the first thing that a lot of couples go through, especially when you get engaged and go into marriage, you have to decide, do you become a one bank account type of family, having one account? And that one account is probably one of the most significant things you can do in this age, because you're gonna feel weird doing it. You're gonna go to the bank together, and she's gonna be next to you. She's gonna have to sign in. You're gonna have to sign in. She's gonna have to get a card. She's gonna have to change her bank deposit to hit that account. She's gonna have to trust you. You're gonna have to trust her. You're gonna have to look at the account together, so no financial stability. It's all types of stuff. It's wild out here. But it's gonna be are you married yet or? Oh,
No.
hey, once you get to that, when you're sitting at that bank, I trust me, you're gonna feel weird about it. You're like, oh, this is real now. It's really real. It's like I said, I love her, but ooh, this is really real. We're tight now. So now you get into a position where you make this decision, and we're working together through our money issues, or if we have any. But what ended up working for us, because that's another thing too. As a young guy, I'm gonna let you know, when your wife says she's gonna go get groceries, when I go get groceries, I go to the grocery store, and I come back from the grocery store and go home. That's a one-to-one ABBA, relationship. That's what's going on. My wife, not so much. I've learned that when she goes to the grocery store, she could go to one or two or even three grocery stores looking for whatever item that might be. Me, I would have just settled for the one. But she'd also go to, maybe she's on the side of Marshalls or something. She sees a Ross. She maybe decide to do whatever it is. Because I kept on seeing that in a truck, like I'd call her. I was like, "Hey, we're getting robbed." And like, it's like on our credit cards. Like, hey, who's robbing us? So like, who is this in the charge? And what ended up working out for us, we actually have two accounts. One is the main family account, and it's all good. But she also has her own slush fund on the side. That means this is the money that she could do those exploratory things, being that she just want to maybe spend more money, some money on her sisters because she loves her sisters or her mom or her dad, or she wants to buy her friend a gift, or even decide like last minute that, I want to have new blinds, that kind of thing. This is something that she could do on her own that's just, allows her conventional freedom. And in some relationship, it's not the woman that needs the little slush account. It might be the man, because I have one of my best friends, he's more of the entrepreneurial spirit, so he like to travel or dabble in different things. And I had explained to his wife, like, you're gonna have to give him like a slush fund that he can dabble off of versus in the main family account. Why? Because the main family account needs to be, you know, stable, needs to have everything that you, you know, to continue keeping up with the household, so on and so forth. And him having that extra, maybe even if it's $5,000, $10,000 a year, this is the amount of room that he has to mess up versus not messing up the main amount of money that the family is working off of. In this day and age, I think that could work for a lot of different people. But having the bulk of money coming into one account will probably be the best, because you can pay down your debt, you can actually do better with it, and you can actually invest more together. I don't know if that answers the question. That's a lot.
No, you definitely did. You definitely did. And I definitely have a great understanding of you and your wife relationship. And I definitely want to commend you as a guy, you know, the fact that, you know, you saw an issue and you was able to address it in a very meaningful way and not, you know, let your ego or any pride get into the way you're addressing it. The reason why I say that, because you have her have a slush account. Do you have a slush account, or only she has?
Only she has it. I know other people could end up having three, but I'm not the type of, I'm not that kind of spender. Most of the time I spend my time at home, 80% of it. I just chill. I'm really more laid back. If any time I ever slush anything, it would be to invest more. So I do have to watch myself, but I do have a budget and I kind of like the numbers game. But for the most part, like I don't have a slush fund. If there's any, you know, really big, like a purchase of clothes or something I need to get a second opinion on, I'll definitely hit up my wife, because she's my second, you know, my significant other. She knows, she's my better half. She understands what we could definitely benefit from. And I value her opinion probably just as much, if not more so, than mine as well. It's just something that in a partnership, that's what you do. But I don't have my own slush. I don't think I need one. I don't, you know, some people, they do. They really need it to kind of goof off, have a good time, you know, support other people, do other things. But for me, nah, I'm good.
Nah, so that's even why, even more, like, you know, I was saying earlier, why I commend you, because oftentimes he would like to do one for one. You know, you take this, I take that. So I do commend you for that, you know, recognizing that you don't need it, but your wife may need it based on the kind of person she is. And, you know, to kind of wrap this up, you know, I wanted to ask, you know, what are some resources that people can tap into to learn more about financial freedom, financial literacy that you have?
Some resources. For sure, they could definitely follow me if they ever want to on social media and all the different interweb platforms, the neighborhoodfinanceguy.com. I have a lot of stuff there. I also have I co-host a podcast called The Financial Griot with two other young ladies that we do focus on a lot of the stories that really impact the Black community, or even just stories that impact millennials or first generation wealth builders. So we love to chat, and we definitely love to have you on too, whenever you want to come on, because we goof off about this thing. We make light of money because I think it's too stuffy around money and it scares off a lot of people. But if we kind of open up and tell real stories about, you know, our struggles, things that we've gone through, we find a lot of different people. But everything else, I would say, you know, in the back of my mind, the first thing that pops up is the Money Guy Show. I think it's probably the most balanced financial literacy information, but it is dense. It's not the easiest to at the onset to understand, but they probably provide the best content on the planet in regards to personal finance. It's something you tap into it. They're never on the wrong side of it. They're never extreme. They really know what the financial order of operation means. It's kind of like you don't put on your pants before you put on your underwear type of thing. You have to know how you can kind of structure your money in order for it to work for you in the best way. Beyond that, there is a whole ton of new Black people of color financial literacy platforms that's popping up. I wouldn't say all of them are the greatest, but the people that I've met around the way to be like the Journey to Launch are really, Journey to Launch is amazing. It's an amazing layout of how she does it. I'll tell people to definitely get on mint.com. It is a free app. It captures your information. It doesn't manipulate anything as much more. It shows you where your money is going. And if you want to graduate from there, use Personal Capital. It's free. Again, I was taught the free stuff. I don't think, like, if free thing exists, why would you pay for anything? I go with the free. Personal Capital is amazing. It helps you track your wealth, your debt spending, and also your investment portfolio, as well as all the fees that go on in there. It's an amazing tool. It's literally a tool that wealth professionals would use when they talk about Monte Carlo simulator and try to like really make the words bigger. They, I work with very wealthy people. I'm like, nah, I am wealthy. Now tell me more. Because a lot of them, they don't really know. But ultimately, these programs are free. They're available. And you can definitely tap into them. And they're gonna change your life. And I guess I would say in the end of the day, no matter what it is, it can change and improve your life. But you got to want it for yourself.
Uh-huh. You're 100% right on that. And, you know, I do have this last question. Because I know you have a blog. And I guess we didn't get to speak about it. But, you know, I want to ask, you know, what inspired you to start blogging, this whole process and just creating content around this financial journey?
At this point, I think it's just slavery. Like, because I'm like, I gotta go work on another blog, and I'm gonna even make money off of this sucker. But ultimately, it goes back down to that conversation that I had in that quad in Tallahassee in 2012, where I was trying to share this information with my friends, and because they didn't understand what I was saying, I try to write it down. I try to speak to it. I learned, you know, even like going through Toastmasters to speak, become a better public speaker and so on and so forth. I'm learning all this stuff. I'm exchanging it. Then I'm like, I need to write a book. Then I started writing like some articles on LinkedIn. I said, if I write 50 articles on LinkedIn, then I'll write a book. I ended up writing like 100. It was insane. Wow. And then after that, I was like, well, I got to put them somewhere. So I ended up deciding to do a website. And my wife actually created the website. And I just kind of worked on it. Why she created it? Because she was bored. She was like, I don't have anything to do. I'm like, all right, cool, do that. And lo and behold, she created a website. I'm like, oh. And it looks, I thought mine was going to look good. But she told me it looked like crap. So, okay. So at the end of the day, she created it. So this is why I do it now, is because it's out there, it's available, it has a ton of resources that people could use. All of it is generally free. I haven't gotten to the point where I sold anything off of it, but there's just a ton of stuff. There's over, at this point, there's likely 290 blog posts and at least 50 different free like resources, Excel sheets, PowerPoint presentations, so on and so forth, that people can really dive into. And I just want people around me in my environment years from now, you know, like 20 years from now, when I'm a multimillionaire and blah, 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 retire. And it's like, I never heard of this. I'm like, oh, you didn't, did you? Oh, whatever. Like, part of me is a little bit of a glow. I'm still not completely healed in these spaces. Still a little bit petty. So I just want to be like, aha, see, my website had this thing all the time and you didn't tap in. That's on you.
No, I definitely want to say, Mr. Lauren, I definitely enjoyed this conversation. I definitely enjoy, you know, having you in the show and learning about your story. You know, I want to ask, you know, if you had to have any word of wisdom for anyone that's listening, you know, they heard of your story, you know, heard of how you have to step outside of your comfort zone to start this journey, you know, learn from your grandparents, you know, invest in your 401k. What would you say to someone as a closing word, a word of wisdom?
Closing word. Oh man, that'd be a closing story, but ultimately it's not in closing story. I'll try this one out because I really wanted to express it. When I was in boot camp, that was years ago, I made a mistake of doing rifle week. And in Marine Corps boot camp, there's different evolutions, the different competition that we got to go through and different, you know, learning modules. And in that learning module is actually shooting. In the shooting module, for whatever reason, my drill instructor at the time, he was passing by and he swore he heard that I like overshot after the time limit or something like that. So he was really pissed. He literally told me at that time that if you don't, you know, score and hit it on the black, every last one of them, the next 10 shots, then you'll be dropped from the program and you'd have to restart all over again. Being wow. Completely afraid, he affixed, and I have to use the word affixed, the rifle to my arm by like cinching it in. I settled in pure fear. And the moment the thing said shoot, I shot through that in three separate series, I shot perfect. Wow. When I mean like, he'll look up with the binoculars, he's like, perfect, next. And, like, and at the time I'm like, I'm still so terrified that I shot again, perfect, next. And lo and behold, it was a perfect spring. In that moment, I wasn't even happy that I did. I was kind of relieved that, hey, like relieved about this entire situation that he moved on from me and I didn't fail. But it taught me an important lesson that it's not impossible. It might just be improbable. any situation that happens in your life might, you know, it seems insurmountable, it might seem totally far-fetched, but it might just seem improbable than it is impossible. So a lot of people that start off really poor, you can actually become rich in your lifetime. It might not be for everyone, but it's an opportunity that exists. And if it exists, then there's a chance. And if there's a chance, then you have to be willing to work at it. And that's what I'd say. I think for anybody here that's listening to these conversations about personal finance and thinking to themselves that, well, that's his story, that's his situation, or that's her situation, that's their win, whatever it is. Like, you have to know for yourself, do you want this or not? And do you want to at least attempt at believing in yourself and giving it a try?
Wow, wow, wow. No other better way to close all of that. And, you know, for those who are listening, you know, I hope you guys don't see another entrepreneur, another business person on the show. But I hope this has showed you that there's possibility for you to make something happen with yourself. And if you're looking for a group of Christians who are working towards becoming financially free, look no further. Enjoy the Praying Invest group and see you guys next week. And thank you again, Mr. Lawrence.